حسبنا الله ونعم الوكيل نعم المولى ونعم النصير أعوذ بالله من الشيطان اللعين الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم الحمد لله رب العالمين والصلاة والسلام على أشرف الأنبياء والمرسلين سيدنا ومولانا أبي القاسم محمد وعلى آله الطيبين الطاهرين المعصومين. Our emotional and mental well-being depends on the understanding and concept that we have of life. A person who doesn't understand what life is will struggle in life to find a balance in his mental capacity and his emotional well-being. He will always be struggling. Either he would become depressed, or either he would be unable to handle the situations of his happiness. When they're happy, they go to extremes. When they're sad, they go to extremes. And hence, a person, in order to find that balance, needs to understand what life is and has to know what the concept of life is. When a person knows what life is, then you see that his life will find balance, that you will be able to find an equilibrium in between those situations where you are sad or where you are happy. And you would know exactly how to deal with the different situations that come into your life. And this is what we are trying to understand. What is life? How do you define life? How do we define life? Now, when I say definition of life, I'm not asking you to go to the Webster Dictionary to look up what life is, or even like Wikipedia it and see, you know, okay, what is life? And what are the theories of life? I'm not even asking you to go and see what the Quran says about life. It really doesn't matter what the Prophet and the Imam said about life also. Understand me very well so that you know what I'm saying. See, even if Allah says something about life in the Quran, really it will not affect you until and unless you actually believe in that. If the Imam says that, okay, this is what life is, that will only have an influence in your life if you actually believe in it. If you don't believe in it, then, you know, to memorize a hadith speaking about life or an ayat speaking about life makes no sense. Really has no effect on us. The idea is that we want to really know what life is. What do we think of life? What is the definition of life in us? The response has to be natural. The response has to be instinctive. What we truly believe. I mean, what is life? Right. Oh, I'm just alive. I mean, okay, what are the characteristics? What is it? What is life to you? Now, when you have a picture and an image of what life is, now I want you to understand and ask yourself, what do you want of life? What do you think life should be? As I said the last time we spoke, right, that yes, a lot of times we see that our image of life is not the way that it should be, or what we regard as life, when we look at ourselves, it's not what we want it to be. So, okay, what do you want life to be then? What is the first thing that you want out of life? Ask yourself this. Go deep in yourself and ask this before I mention. Now I'm going to tell you what you want. Right? And this is not magic that I'm doing. Right? That I'm trying to, you know, be a sorcerer here and tell you, okay, this is what you want from life. No, but the reality is the same in everyone. You see, all human beings, when you look at it, when they look at life, what they want of life are certain things. They want certain things out of life. And that natural instinct and that natural response that they have is the right idea of life. is really the right idea of life. That is what life is. Don't look at, oh, you know, my life is terrible, my life is this. No, life is not that. The situations in your life must be hard, but they also are very sweet if you actually understood it. But we'll get to that later. But right now, what idea do you as an individual have of life? What do you think life should be? You see, my friends, the first thing that every human being, naturally, when he looks at life, he wants from life. What is it that he wants? The first thing that he wants in life. And this is something that everyone wants. You can ask in each and every one, right? What do you want out of life? What is the first thing that you look for in life? The answer, the response to that will be that I want life to be forever. I want to live forever. I don't want death. I don't want to terminate life. You see? Look at the ideal life. I'm telling you, for example, you know, what is your ideal idea? What is the idea of life that you have? You see, the first thing that, you know, the first thing I want is that I want to live forever. You see? This is the first thing we want out of life. We want to live forever. And you know what? Allah is saying, you want it granted. You want it granted, I'm granting it to you. My friends, the first characteristic of life, understand this, the first characteristic of life is that it is forever. It is forever. You know, and this is the first characteristic. Allah Himself says so, made it clear. This is your natural desire to live forever. I'm giving it to you. I'm accepting you. This is it. And hence what happens is that the first thing that Allah gives us, this life that we have, is forever. It's not going to end. It's not going to end. It is going to live forever. Let me give an example if you send aloud salawats. When you go to, when people who enter heaven, when they enter heaven, Jannat, now Jannat and heaven is a place of many joys and many pleasures. So many pleasures that we can't count. So many variety of happiness that we cannot even enumerate. So many ways in which Allah will make us happy. You know, when you hear about, for example, you know, in the ayat of the Quran, really, the words of the Quran, because Quran is revealed in a language, they fail to describe the complete sense of Jannat. They can't. It is impossible. That's why Allah, in His immense eloquence of the language and immense usage of the language that is beyond the ability of man, has went to describe heaven and Jannat for us with all these pleasures that are there. And Imam Ali said that whatever you can imagine of Jannat, just imagine the most thing, you know, that you make this wild Hollywood movie regarding Jannat. Right? As much as you can, you imagine, you put those things in there. You know, whatever you want, you know. For example, the kids, you know. When they look at Jannat, what do they think of? Chocolate factory, you know. Xbox factory, you know, they can get all the games. Whatever you can think of, and however much you can think of, Imam Ali said that whatever you imagine of heaven is a figment of your imagination. Heaven is better than that. It is better than that. It is way beyond that what we can imagine. And hence, in heaven, when a person goes there, so obviously there are many exciting things that Allah can, you know, when you, for example, when you go to an attraction or a theme park or something like that where people have to show you, or, for example, you know, when you go and like want to buy a house and you're doing house shopping and you go there to see a house, you see the people, the salesman, would first of all try to emphasize the main focus point of that house, right? Hey, you know, look at the kitchen, you know, or, you know, man, this house has a living room to die for, or this house has a backyard that you can, you know, live for, and, you know, all of these things. They try to emphasize what? The main selling point. Why? Because that's what they want people to look for. This is it. This is the main selling point. This is it. Now, imagine if someone has to be a salesman for Jannat, right? And he will be trapped, right? I mean, how many things do I need to explain, you know? No matter where I look, it's a selling point. No matter what I do, it's a selling point. That if someone has to choose a selling point from all the millions and trillions of selling points that are in Jannat, what would it be? Understand this. What would it be? That's what Allah says. فَدْخُلُوهَا خَالِدِينَ He says, enter it forever. This is the main selling point. You are going to be here forever. This is forever. That's it. There's no ending here. There's no ending here, right? Imagine this. Allah is using that as the main selling point of Jannah. I mean, all of the things that are there, that is immense. But He's saying this is the first thing that you want to hear. That is forever. So my friends, when Allah made life, He didn't make life to take it back. He didn't make life to take it back. He is not stingy. He's not bakhil. That He said, okay, you know what, I'll only allow you to live for this much and that's it. You know, I'm running out of electricity here. Or power here, you know. I need to save power, you know, so I can give something else. Right? It's not like that, right? The fact is that when Allah gave life to us, it is forever. And hence, our idea of life, the first thing we need to put in our minds and drill into ourselves is that we are forever. But now tell me, how many of us actually believe that? I'm not talking about people outside, right? I'm not talking about people outside, my friends. I'm talking to you, right? How many of us actually believe that? If you truly ask someone randomly, now, how long are you going to live for? What will be the reply? Right? 70, 80 years, 90 years? You see? In other words, you don't believe you will live forever. Right? You don't believe that. The fact is that we don't believe what Allah is saying. If we believe that, then that would be our answer. How long will you live forever? I'm here to live, that's it. I'm going to live, that's it. It's all, it's here. See, again, understand this. This is when we start comprehending that in ourselves. When you start to actually look at that and realize that you will live forever, then your thinking will also be different when it comes to life. Your thinking will be different when it comes to life. Yes. If a child at the age of 3 finds out he is going to live till 8. So obviously he will plan for 5 years. He says, well, this is my plan for my life. 5 years of living, that's all I have, right? So I will live till that age. Like, really, this is, I mean, When death comes and takes them away, and you see that happening, it becomes real. They're not expecting it. Because they're not expecting it, and they think that they're going to live till 80, they're planning till 80. Oh, when I grow up, I want to be this. When I grow up, I want to be this. Why are they saying that? Because they believe they're going to live that long. Right? Because they believe that they're going to live that long. I want to be a doctor when I grow up. I want to be an engineer. I want to be a pilot when I grow up. Why are they saying this? Because they believe they're going to be living that long. Because they believe it, they plan for it also. They think about it. It becomes a part of their life and their life becomes that. You understand it? So if we understand that life is forever, then that life would be in our planning. in our everyday life, we are thinking about it. Well, you know what? This is the house I want in Jannah. That's the type of, you know, drapes I'm looking for. Allah, you know, I know you're going to give me better than that, but this color I like. I want this there. Allah, I like this car, but I know over there, you know, you're going to have those little, you know, those futuristic cars that we, like, for example, see in movies, you know. Right? And hence, our dreams are about that. Our imagination is stretched towards that. Why? Because of the fact that we start believing that life is forever. My friends, the only reason we don't think about Jannah, we don't think about Akhirah, is because we don't believe we're going to live forever. Because of the fact that we have a doubt that we will live, even though Allah said it, even though Ahlul Bayt said it, even though we believe in Allah and Ahlul Bayt, and we have Iman in them, and we do trust what they say, but because there's that doubt in our mind, that's why we tend to ignore it. We tend to put it on the back burner. You know, I mean, I don't know if it's really going to happen, you know. This is what happens with life. And hence, obviously, if your goal is only to live for 70 years, 80 years, then obviously your goals are also going to be limited to that. Your thinking will be limited to that. Your ideas will be limited to that. And that's why I said that a person who doesn't believe in Akhirat has very small goals in life. You know, it's like a three-year-old making dreams for the next 5 years. Right? I want this game, I want that chocolate, I want to eat this much this, I want that much that. This is his dream. His bucket list is very short. Right? It's not a big, you know, like for example, big imagination he has. But if he planned to live forever, you see he has a lot of imagination. His mind goes further. His goals become bigger. Salawat ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad. Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad. When we look at ourselves, people who, for example, do not believe that they're going to live forever, what ends up happening is that they live for their memories of their past. This is what ends up happening. If you don't believe that you're going to live forever, then you will live in your past. This is how you live. Your life, look at your life. What is your life about? When you don't believe you'll live forever, what, you know what your life is about? It's about making memories of your past. Right? Or take picture, I want to remember this. Take pictures, I want to remember this. Right? A video, take a video, I want to remember this. Why are you doing this? It's because you don't believe you're going to live forever. I said, this is it. I want to take all the memories from here. Where are you going with all these memories? How is that going to help you? Why? Because this is a treasure for you, because there is nothing you're expecting after this. If a person who lives for Akhirat, he lives forever, and he knows he's going to live forever, why would he take memories of this? In fact, this would be a vague memory in his future. This would be a vague memory. How much do you remember of your childhood? Yeah, Lord, he's still a child. Of course he remembers a lot, right? The idea is that, you know, you ask us old people, and we'll say, man, I can hardly remember the friends I had. I don't even remember their names. I don't even remember their faces anymore. It's not been that long. They have already been erased from my memory. Some of them are just a vague memory. Right? If I meet them somewhere, I won't even know them. They'll have to remind me, hey, listen, I was in your third grade. Remember, I still have your photograph. I said, I don't know you, man. Are you a salesman? This is, my friend, when you look at it, right? It really, right, for us, when you look at it, people who don't believe in their hereafter, they end up doing what? They end up living in their past. This is all they live for. And you see, at the end, this is it for them. All of this will become a vague memory for us. Not even a vague memory. It will be erased. If you did istighfar, it will be erased. If you did istighfar, it will be erased and it won't be brought up again. Right? And you won't be reminded of all the bad things you did. Right? But if you didn't do istighfar, yes, he'll be brought up again. You know, live, real, you know, from different angles. Huh? Is that you doing this? I didn't know I was being filmed. Yes, you were on live camera. You know? Man, that's such a long time ago. Right? The fact is that for us, you see, life is forever. Really, this is the first thing we need to understand. And if life is forever, then you will see that your whole focus and your attention will be on that forever life, not on this very small piece of life that is here. It won't be here. Let me go into this a little bit more if you send us salawats. You know, if you are living in Tampa, and you know you will be here for a few years, and the rest of those years left of your life, you will have to spend, let's say, I don't know, Paris, or wherever, right? As an example, random example, right? That you have to spend there. The rest of your life you're going to spend there. Only a few years you're here. So would you be making plans to build your home and everything here? Knowing that you're leaving here in a few years, your job is going to go away from here. You know, if your job said, listen, you're here for 3 years, but the rest of your life, you're coming back to our headquarters in Paris. That's where you live forever, for your whole life. So obviously, you wouldn't be making plans here, right? That, hey, you know what, I'm making, you know, I said, you know, I'm here for 3 years, and I'm trying to save up money so I can buy a home there, right? Do everything there, right? You wouldn't be making plans for here, and that would be the case. And now, but the natural, the effect that it has on us is that, you know what? If we're not going to be living here forever, you see, our life becomes at a standstill. Really, it becomes at a standstill, right? If you know you're going to live there forever, and I'm only here for a few months, then, man, I'm a lame duck here. You know, I can't do anything permanent here. I can't do anything long-lasting here. So I'm just waiting to get out of here, right? Right? I mean, you won't go and buy a house and settle down. You can't do that because you're leaving here. My friends, what happens? What would be the psychological effect on that person? He would be like waiting to get out. And while he's here, he's just trying to bide his time. Right? Get over his time here. You know what? I'm just waiting for these 3 years to pass so that I can move to my home where I'm going to stay. So the effect is that that person would not be happy here. Yeah, I mean, have his friend circles where he's trying to find those temporary happiness and temporary feelings of joy. He'll try to do those things. But you see that he will not be happy here because he is living here temporarily. He won't be happy here. This is the reason when a mu'min recognizes that the life here is temporary, then his heart is sad. He says, قُلُوبُهُمْ مَحْذُونَ. Their hearts are, you know, it, like for example, they're tightened, restricted. That they can't do anything openly here. They can't do anything long-lasting here. I know I'm going to go there forever, so I can't do anything long-lasting here. And hence, you know, just waiting to go. You're waiting to leave. And that's the reason you see that a mu'min's heart here will be like that if you know you're going to live forever. But there's a difference in this sadness. It's not a sadness like a person who's depressed. It's not like that. It has certain different qualities in it. Right? The first quality is that you will see that a mu'min, that sadness that exists within his heart remains in his heart. He doesn't bring it out. He doesn't bring it out. This sadness that is there because of the feeling that he has in this dunya, it remains in his heart. It doesn't come out of his heart. Why? Because of the fact that it doesn't affect him. He knows where he's going is great. He knows where he's going is something that is forever. He knows that. And that's the reason he's not sad here. That sadness is in his heart. He won't show it. Oh, I'm sad. I'm terrified here. I'm this and that. You see, a mu'min will be smiling at you. Right? But within his heart, he holds his sadness. He holds that restricted feeling that he has inside of himself. Not outward. You know, he doesn't complain to people, oh, this life is a, you know. Yeah. It's kosher. Right? So what happens is that when you look at it, he won't be like that. The first quality of a mu'min's sadness is that it is hidden. The second quality of a sadness is that it's subtle. It is subtle. He realizes why he is sad. It doesn't pour into his other parts of his life. Right? It doesn't affect the other parts of his life. You see, it's subtle. His understanding is subtle. And he understands that he's sad because of this reason, and he will go through this life. It's like, for example, you're doing time. Right? When you do a time, so what happens is that, listen, I just want to do my time and get out of here. Right? As soon as I can get out of here, the better for me. Right? Now, obviously, you're not going to make it your home and say, okay, you know what? I don't want to get out. Right? This is it. This is what I want. This is my life's goal, is to be here. Right? And when you look at that person, you'll laugh at him or you'll feel pity and sorry for him. What's wrong with you? There's a whole world outside there. Why are you stuck in here for? That says, dunya sijnun li mu'min. The world is a prison for a mu'min, for a believer. Why? Because he feels restricted here. But again, he doesn't show that sadness. You know, he's smiling at you all the time. He's happy. And when you look at him, he's like, wow, you know, you're happy with life. Right? But he holds the sadness inside. And the third thing is that it doesn't affect his behavior with other people. Same thing. Right? It will not affect his behavior with other people. These are signs of a mu'min's sadness. So do not think that mu'mineen are not sad in this dunya. No, they are sad. They recognize this place as restricted. They recognize this place as temporary. They recognize this place as a place where they're going to leave. And hence, they're not planning anything permanent over here. That's why when you look at a mu'min's life, you see that he is happy here. In fact, he is more happier than others. He's happier than others. The others are saddened because they don't understand. The more dunya you gain, the more burden is on your head. The more relationship you made with this dunya, the more roots you have here, the harder it is to detach you from here. Then, you know, they don't understand that, and that's why depression comes into place. Right? They got attached to the wrong things. That's what happens at the end. My friends, this is the first aspect to understand of life, that it is forever. Salawat ala Muhammad wa ala Muhammad. Life should be forever. Right? That's what life should be. Right? When you look at the prophets, they also taught us that. They also taught us that. They said, you know, I mean, things that die away are really not good things. Right? When Ibrahim was making arguments for Allah with the idol worshippers, those who worship the moon and the sun, what did he say? He says, look at the moon. Is that God? The moon goes away. I don't like things that go away. Right? Is sun, is that the God? Sun goes away. I don't like things that die away. In other words, the heart and the ideology of a prophet is saying that things that die are something not worth living for. They're not worth living for. Really, they're not worth living for. And this is when we look at that ideology that the prophet is trying to give us. I mean, all the prophets are trying to give us is this. It's not worth living for something that will die for. If this life was it and death was the end, it's not worth living for this life then. It's really not worth living for this life. Really. One incident that you heard before from me, just I want to brief through it because in it there's that message. It's about that man who asked Rasulullah that, you know, I want, you know, like for example, I want something from you. And Rasulullah said, what do you want? Right? Because he asked, he said, you know, that listen, you owe me for something and I want it back and I want a reward for that. He said, what do you want? And the man said that I want to be with you in Jannat. You know, Now, obviously, you know, when Rasulullah heard that, the first thing he asked him is that, did you make this up yourself or did you learn it from someone else? This question, this request. He says, no, I mean, it's myself. And Rasulullah is asking to really make sure he understands what he's asking for. Do you comprehend what you're asking for? Sometimes we ask for things and we don't even know what we're asking for. We don't even comprehend the weight and value of what we're asking for. We just ask for it. Because when we read the du'as of the masoom, they are talking to Allah and they're talking at their level. So now we take those things that the imam asked for and we start asking for those things when we don't have any clue as to what it is that they're asking for. Do you really understand what you're asking for? The first thing when you ask for something, ask it when you really know what you're asking for. This is the reason when you ask for Imam-e-Zamana to come back. I mean, do you know what you're asking for? Do you understand the weight of your request? You know, if he comes back, are you ready to take up that responsibility? If he comes back, are you ready to sacrifice your green cards and status? Are you ready to go up against the armies of oppression? Or the first sign of an officer who comes to your house and knocks on your door and says, I submit to you. I submit to you. Right? Understand this. Do you really understand the weight of what you're asking for? If you don't, then don't ask for it. Really don't ask for it. It's not good. Right, asking for something that you don't know. Like, for example, a kid asking you, you know, he's your kid in kindergarten, asking you, hey, Dad, you know, I want a server in the house. You know, computer server. What do you do with a server? You're in kindergarten. You don't even know how to use a computer. Right? What do you need that for? Do you know what you're asking for? Because he just looked at it in the magazine. It was there. It cost about $50,000? He wants it. The fact is that you don't know what you're asking for. Right? Understand what you're asking, and then you know, is it useful for you? You know, sometimes, you know, a lot of people, you know, they ask for a wife. Do you know what you're asking for? You know? Can you handle it? You know, if you get money, you know, Allah might just grant you your request. Right? And you know what? First thing you do is destroy that blessing. Right? You destroy that blessing. You don't know how to handle it. You don't know how to deal with it. You don't have responsibility to deal with it. Right? Same thing with the Imam-e-Zaman. You ask for Imam-e-Zaman, you need to know what you're asking for. This is why when you ask for something, when this person is asking for an eternal life in Jannah, Rasulullah is saying, do you know what this is about? Do you know what this is about? You know, and then he says, yes, I know. Then Rasulullah said, all right, I will grant you the wish, but it's one thing. You need to help me also. It is a big wish. You want to be with me in Jannah. You see, if you had asked for Jannah, okay, that would be different. But you want to be with me in Jannah, that's a very tall order. Right? Very tall order, right? So if you want to be with me, then you have to help me also. A'inni bikathrati sujood, make a lot of sajda in your life to help me. So I can make a case for you. Make a lot of sajda. Those who do a lot of sajda, then Rasulullah can make a case. Yes, he did the sajda, Allah, for this. Make him my neighbor. You see, this is the way. Salawat ala Muhammad wa ala Muhammad. Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ala Muhammad. Now when you look at the extent of life, and this is where I just want to end, my friends, you know, and inshallah, you know, next time we meet and we will discuss more, right? The first characteristic of life, again, is that it is forever. When life is forever, then obviously we know it's divided into two types. One is the short thing here, one is the long thing here. I will leave you with this in mind so that you understand. In short, I will just leave this idea in mind. From here, we'll go on from here. When we look at life, when we look at life itself, my friends, to understand life, and I'm going to define it this way, to understand life in order to make it more, practical for you to understand, life has three dimensions. Life is three-dimensional. The definition of life is three-dimensional. It has a length, it has a height, and it has a width. Life has a length, life has a height, life has a width. Right? The length of life is how long it's going to be. And that I just discussed with you, it is forever. The height of life is how far up you can go in life. And the width of life is how much capacity you have to use what you are getting. These are three things that you need to understand about life, and I will explain them in detail later. Just these three things. My friends, obviously, if you are told that you're going to be living forever, okay, but what is my height? You will be a cow. You want to be a cow forever? I'd rather not live forever. Right? If I'm going to be a cow forever, you know, the idea is that, you know, the height of life is necessary for the length of life to be useful. And then if I am going to live forever and if I have this height, how much can I use of what I'm getting? If I can't use a lot, then again, what's the use of all these blessings that you're giving me? You can give me 1,000 blessings, but I can only use one. Right? You can give me 1,000 pizzas, but I can only eat one. That's enough for me. What am I going to do with 999? I can't eat it. If I can't use 1,000, why are you giving me 1,000? 1,000 doesn't make sense. Right? It wouldn't make sense if you give me all this blessing if I can't use it. This is the breadth, the width of life. These are the things that we want to discuss. My friends, just right now, you are a person who understands he's going to live forever. You will be, first of all, happy. Life must be such that your understanding of life is such that it makes you so happy and so excited and so exhilarated that when people look at you, they become envious. Why are you so happy? Why are you so happy? Right? A mu'min, that's the way his life is. When a mu'min has a life like that, then his Islam would make sense. Then his offering to Allah would make sense. Really. If you are happy in your life, if your life is such and you're living it in such a way that you're so happy, then any offering you make to Allah would be understandable, it would be valuable. But if you're not happy and if you're miserable, no matter what offering you make to Allah, that offering, that sacrifice doesn't have value. It doesn't have value, my friends. Understand this very much, very clearly. You know, a person who has value for life, who values life, that person, when he does make a sacrifice, his sacrifice is worth something. It's worth something. Otherwise, if your life itself is miserable and you don't want to live it anymore, you're so unhappy, so what are you sacrificing? What are you sacrificing? What kind of life is it that you're sacrificing? That's the reason why these Wahhabis and Taliban al-Qaeda get those miserable people whose life are miserable, so when they are saying, hey, listen, you can get 70 virgins there, you know, these guys thought, man, I can't get anyone here. Let me go there. I mean, what kind of sacrifice is that? Your life is miserable, man. You're not sacrificing anything for Allah. You don't have a life. You see, if you had a life, it would make sense that you're sacrificing something of value. That you're really sacrificing something of value. My friends, Imam Hussein had a life. If you look at how Imam Sadiq alayhi salam speaks of Imam Hussein, you know, he speaks of Imam Hussein for us to understand. He speaks of him and he gives testimony. He says, Ishta Sa'idan wa Madaita Hamida. He says that you lived your life, you lived a life that was happy, that was great, and you died a death that was praiseworthy. In other words, he's saying to Imam Hussein that, yo, you were happy. You had things in life. Because you had so much things in life, that's why, you know, your sacrifice is up there. If someone is living a miserable life, if someone is unhappy, you know, and he says, you know what, okay, you know, I offer to give myself up. What is that? My friends, the value of the sacrifice of Ali Akbar and Abbas is understood by the life that they had, the value they attached to life. They had a life. They had a life that was not just meaningful, it was worthy. It was deserving. When you looked at them, you were like, wow, I wish I could be like that. I could have a life like that. You would be envious of their life that they had. So when they did sacrifice, the sacrifice had meaning, had weight, had value. Then it had value in there. This is the reason when you look at Ahlul Bayt and when you look at them, you really see them. Truly they had that value for life, that immense value for life, that even when others looked at it, they were envious of it. When Imam Sajjad was brought into the court of Kufa and he stood there before Ibn Ziyad, and Ibn Ziyad asked these people, who was this person? I thought everyone was killed. Why is he alive? So they said, well, he was sick. He's the only man in there. House. So they asked us to leave him be, so we left him alive. So Ibn Ziyad decided, you know what? No, I want him killed also. I want him killed also. So they went to kill him. Right? They went to kill him. As soon as Zainab heard this, she flung herself in front of Imam Sajjad. And flung her body in front of Imam Sajjad as the swords were coming down. Without any care for her life. Without any care for her life, she flung herself. She stood between those swords and said, you'll have to kill me before you kill him. You have to kill me before you kill him. You know, when everyone saw that, the people who were striking with the sword, they stopped. They couldn't do it. They just stopped. Ibn Ziyad also stopped. He looked at this and he says, look at them. How much love they have for each other. Don't you envy their lives? Look at these people. How much love they have for each other. We don't have that much love that these people have. They have value, my friend. This is what adds to sacrifice. When you look at that. Even when others looked at Ahlul Bayt, you see that they had this. You see, this is the value that they had. This is that thing that they had. My friends, today is the first of Safar, right? It was the first of Safar. Today is the day that Ahlul Bayt and Imam Sajjad and the ladies and the children arrived in Sham. They arrived in Sham today. After 20 days of travel, on the first of Safar is the day they arrived in Sham. And obviously their entrance into Sham was such a spectacle that Imam Sajjad could not forget it in his whole life. You know, Imam Sajjad said to a person who asked him, where did you see the most musibat, most hardship and difficulty in all this journey? He said, Asham, Asham, Asham. It was in Sham. Let me just describe to you what happened in Sham. You know, Kufa was abrupt. When the prisoners were brought to Kufa, it was abrupt. They were just brought in. The people of Kufa didn't know what was going on. Only the people who saw them on the streets saw them. There was no real announcement to bring the people out, even though they were kept at an intersection for some time in order that people see them, but no one really paid attention or noticed. Some people saw them, some people did or not. But you know what? Sham was different. Sham was different. You know, in Sham, when the caravan arrived there and the prisoners arrived there, they were kept outside of the city and encamped there for 3 days. And for 3 days, the city was being decorated. The city was being decorated to celebrate the victory of Yazid over his enemies. That enemies who had risen against Yazid, Yazid has defeated them. They wanted to see, everyone was coming out to see who dared rise up against Yazid. And we want to see the ending of these people. Who are these people who would rise up against the emperor of Islam and the Muslim ruler? How dare they do that? Everyone wanted to see who did Yazid fight. Who was Yazid fighting? And their whole city was decorated. And everyone was brought out. And they were given instructions that when the prisoners come, you jeer at them and laugh at them. And you throw stones at them. You hurt them with stones. And it is allowed for you to do that. Don't worry. These are the enemies of Islam, and do it. And these instructions were given to the people. The people came out in hordes, lined up on the streets. It was a victory celebration, yet you'll have a parade. And now the prisoners were brought in. And as the prisoners were brought in, what the people saw was a young man, the only man in the caravan, a young man who had lost so much weight that nothing remained on him but his bones. They looked at him and said, this person, this sickly young person. And then what they saw behind him was even worse than that. They saw a chain that was tied to the necks of the woman. And they saw a woman lined up there. They saw a woman lined up there. And children were lined up with them also. In such a way that the chain, that the rope that was tied on their necks was tied on everyone, and they were being dragged. They were being dragged. And what would happen is that whenever the tall ones would stand up, the short ones would get hurt because their necks would stretch. Their neck would stretch. Every time Zainab stood up, Sakina would cry out, Aunt Zainab, please sit down. Please sit down. My neck is hurting me. My neck is hurting me. What can I say? And every time Sakina would sit down, then the ladies' necks would hurt. And this is how they're being dragged. When the people saw this people come in, he says, these are the people who rose up against Yazid. These are Yazid's people. So he's celebrating victory because he brought these women as prisoners of war. I mean, what kind of unmanly person is he? I mean, imagine this. Women being brought in. These are the enemies of the state. These children being brought, being enemies of the state. Imam Sajjad was going in front of them. And he came to them. Certain things I can't even mention from the member what happened in Sham. People didn't know them, but you know, Imam Sajjad, he was trying to help. He was trying to make the people understand. Someone came to Imam Sajjad and spit on his face. Someone came to Imam Sajjad and spit on his face. Imam Sajjad did not get angry. Imam Sajjad did not show any sign of anger or any sign of disrespect. You know, Imam Sajjad just asked him, tell me, are you a Muslim? He says, yes, I'm a Muslim. He says, do you read Quran? He says, yes, I read Quran. He says, did you read this verse in the Quran? Do you know what it means? He says, yes, I know what it means. Of course I read Quran. He said, do you know this other verse? He said, yes. And then the person asked him, well, tell me, who you, the enemy of the state, you who rose up against our Amir al-Mu'mineen, you who have risen up against the Muslim emperor, what are these ayat to you? He said, Allah revealed them for us.
آیت تطہیر واز ریویل فار اس, آیت مودت واز ریویل فار اس. He said, who are you? He says, Ana Ibn al-Husayn, Ibn Ali. I'm the grandson of Rasulullah. When the person heard that, he could not believe it. You are the grandson of Rasulullah. And you are brought like this in this place. And these are the granddaughters of Rasulullah who are being brought like this in front of all the people. He says, let me tell you, let me help you. What should I do? Tell me, can I do something to help you? You know, Imam Sajjad said, you know, there's one thing that we need. If you want to help us, there's one thing that we need. Then thing that these ladies want and they need is, what is that? Bring something so that they can cover themselves with. If you really want to help, bring something so that they can cover their shame in front of people. Can you imagine what's going through the heart of Imam Sajjad? Someone came to him and asked him for help. He's asking for hijab. He said, give them something to wear so that they can hide their shame and honor from the people. This is Rasulullah's family. He brought some cloth out for them and he started giving it out to the ladies. As soon as the soldiers saw it, they came up to him. He says, what are you doing? He says, I'm giving them. They're Muslims, for God's sake. Let them cover themselves. He says, no, it's not allowed for us to cover them. Let them be like this. They're prisoners of war. This is what Zainab went through. This is what she went through. Can you understand that? Zainab, just let me tell you one more incident and inshallah, you give your condolences. You know, long after this time had passed, when Zainab had gone back to Medina, and one day when Zainab went to the grave of her mother, and as was her habit, she would go there and cry. And she would cry there and give her condolences to Fatima and give her condolences and give her complaints to Fatima. Who can she cry in front of? She didn't have anyone she could cry in front of. So she would give her complaints to Fatima and she would say to her grave that, my mother, where were you? This and that. One day Zainab says that as I was crying, I fell asleep. And in my sleep, I saw a dream. And in my dream, my mother came to me. My mother appeared before me. The minute I saw my mother, my tears started rolling down. I could not control myself. I broke down in front of her. I said, mother, I can't be patient anymore. Hold me, mother, I can't be patient anymore. I've been through so much and you weren't there for me. All I've been through, you know what I've been through. I've been through so much. You wouldn't believe what I've been through, mother. And I missed you in every of those situations. I missed you. Mother, you know what I saw? I saw Akbar's body coming into the tent and there's a spear in his chest. I saw my children being killed one by one. Mother, you know what I saw with my own eyes? I saw them slaughtering the head of my brother Hussein. I saw him there. And you know that we were taken as prisoners. They tied our hands and they dragged us through the city and they were throwing stones at us. One by one, Zainab went through every situation and cried before her mother and said, mother, where were you when I was going through this? Where were you? I missed you, mother. And then Fatima heard Zainab. What can Fatima say? Fatima heard Zainab and said, Zainab, you know my Zainab, I was with you every step of the way. Don't complain to me, Zainab. I was with you every step of the way. You saw Akbar's body come in the tents. I saw the spear go in his heart. You saw Hussein being slaughtered from the hill. I saw Hussein being slaughtered on my lap. You saw all the children die. I saw them and how they died. I was there when it was happening. And let me tell you, Zainab, when you were going through Sham and they were throwing stones at you, Zainab, you know where I was? I was looking for every stone that would come your way and I would put my head in your way so that my head would take the stone and it would not hit you.
سيعلم الذين ظلموا أي منقلب ينقلبون. ما تم حسين يا